Good morning. The committee will now come to order. Welcome, colleagues, distinguished witnesses, and all in attendance this morning. Our colleague and chairman, Mr. Steve Bouya, is unfortunately unable to be here to start this hearing due to an avoidable conflict. However, I do anticipate the chairman will be joining us shortly. Our hearing today provides an opportunity to consider new and innovative ways to enhance health care access for our nation's veterans while at the same time making prudent use of the taxpayers' dollars. Specifically, we are here to critically examine the Project Healthcare effectiveness through resource optimization, demonstration known as Project HERO. One of the reasons that I'm excited to be here today is that I think it's important to hear that it's what is currently being considered inside the VA, gain a better understanding of how these demonstrations will be rolled out, and to put to rest in a public forum some people's concern over the outsourcing of VA healthcare. Project HERO, as I understand, is a series of VISN-wide demonstrations that seeks to improve the level of collaboration between private contract providers and the VA to ensure the most prudent expenditure of VA's resources, while enhancing the continuity of services provided in and outside the VA system. Project HERO is intended to be purely voluntarily program for currently enrolled veterans and will not seek to expand eligibility. The competitive contracting process is currently projected to take place in the late summer, with contracts awarded at the end of 2006. The testimony we are about to hear today from Congressman Osman, the VA, a private sector contractor, and the Veterans Service Organization, I sense will help detail a set of VISN-wide demonstration projects that are still in their infancy. That is to say, I think it is clear that there is still a considerable amount of work to be done before Project HERO becomes a reality. I would now like to recognize Mr. Michaud for any opening statements he might have.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I want to thank you for holding this hearing and also would ask that my full statement be part of the record.
Without objection.
Because of the scope, focus, cost, and duration of this project have not specifically been authorized by this committee, this hearing, I think, is extremely important. I appreciate that because we are at the beginning stage of this project. Most of the parameters are undefined. While VA may not know at this time if this project is going to cost $2 million or a $2 billion demonstration project, I believe it is important to clarify the cost of this demonstration and projected savings that VA hopes to achieve by better coordinating fee-based care. With respect to this demonstration project, we have a balancing act. We want to encourage bold thinking about ways to enhance quality and cost efficiencies, but we must also exercise responsible stewardship to ensure accountability and performance. Chairman Bouyer, as chair of the Oversight and Investigation Committee, was a leader in examining how poor contract management can ruin good ideas. With core FLS, VA attempted an innovative idea to generate synergies through an integrated system that combined logistical, billing, and other management functions. But we know that the results did not come close to meeting that expectation. At its inception, the VA did not clearly define what it needed from its contractor. VA, in effect, invited the contractor to make government decisions without the necessary independent evaluation to ensure success. Mr. Chairman, it is my hope that with this hearing and in future action as authorizers, we can help VA flesh out a clear focus of the scope, cost, projected cost savings, and quality performance measures for this project to advance quality care for our veterans. I'm also interested in learning how this program will work in conjunction with the implementation of CARE's recommendation. In particular, how can we reduce VA's cost by purchasing care by moving forward on established needed C-Box and outreach center? So, Mr. Chairman, I'd request I'll submit the rest of my testimony for the record. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Michaud. Mr. Lisbon.
Thank you. Very quickly, I'd like to thank the staff of both sides. We had a hearing in Arkansas concerning updating the GI Bill and the Transition Assistance Transition Assistance Program. And Mr. Snyder, Ms. Herseth, and Senator Pryor were there. And again, I just want to thank the hard work of the staff. We had an excellent meeting. The other thing is, and I know we're going to do a lot more on this, but I just want for the record to let everyone know how saddened I am by the retirement of Mr. Evans. And, you know, nobody's worked harder for veterans or been more active on this committee than he has. And so, like I said, hopefully we'll do a lot more along that line. But, again, thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Boone. Ms. Berkley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And, Mr. Bozeman, I think those are very lovely words. I was very heartsick to hear about Lane Evans' retirement, although I thought it's a long time coming, and he will be missed by the veterans and by the people that work with him on this committee and throughout Congress on both sides of the aisle. Mr. Chairman, I am going to submit my comments, my opening statement for the record, but there are a couple of comments that I would like to make on the record. I am a proponent of the VA system, and I read with great interest the independent budget letter to Dr. Perlin expressing concerns about the HERO demonstration project, and I share those concerns. I have a series of questions that I'd like answered. Unfortunately, I have three committees meeting simultaneously, and I'm not going to be able to stay to hear the responses to my questions, but we're very delighted to welcome our colleague, Mr. Osborne, and if you wouldn't mind, and I'm sure that in your opening remarks you will address yourself to your thoughts on the best way to provide private care for our veterans. Should they be able to go to any doctor, hospital, or clinic, or will they go to one location? I'd like to know your ideas on the best way to run Project HERO. And I recognize, while I represent a very urban part of our country, that many of our veterans living in rural areas are in need of care and have difficulty finding a VA hospital or clinic in their near enough to them to actually help. When we have our second panel, I'd be very appreciative if certain questions were answered regarding the care provided to veterans by VA contractors, the fact that it's usually disconnected from VA quality standards, electronic medical records, clinical guidelines, a continuum of VA-provided care. How will the VA hold private providers to VA standards and guidelines? And one of my primary concerns is the fact that the VA budget, in my estimation, is underfunded as it is. Is this project going to divert limited funding away from the established VA clinics and outreach centers that could replace the need for the VA to collaborate with private contractors? And my concern is that we don't substitute and use this as a foothold to start dismantling the VA healthcare system. I do not have in my packet Dr. Perlin's response to the letter written by the independent budget, but I would appreciate either seeing his response or having the questions that were asked in this letter answered for the entire committee. I think they brought up some very interesting points that need addressing. And before I would embrace this project, I would need to have these questions answered to my satisfaction. And with that, I want to thank you for giving us an opportunity to hear your or share your thoughts with us. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you, Ms. Burton. Ms. Moran, you have an open statement.
I do, Mr. Chairman. Thank you very much for recognizing me. I applaud the opportunity to be here today with the department. Appreciate the opportunity to cross-examine Mr. Osborne. We'll miss the opportunity for him and I to work together. He and I share districts that are very similar, and this is an important issue for us in trying to make certain that rural veterans have access to health care. I think there's two components of this project that I think I want to hear more about. I want to lend my support in efforts to make improvements to see that something happens in this regard, at the same time making certain that our hospitals in communities across the country, our VA hospitals, have the adequate resources to provide the specialized care that they so adequately provide. So I very much want to make sure this is not a net loss to the VA hospital system, but I represent a district in which there is no VA hospital. This, to me, there's two issues here about access, one being access, the other being sharing of information between the VA, its physicians, and community physicians and hospitals. On the access side, two examples, and I've seen Mr. Osborne's testimony, and he'll talk about what the situation is in Nebraska, but in my district, just within the last couple of months, one of my neighbors down the street is a retired FBI agent who's been receiving VA-approved dental care for his injuries that he received during his military service in our hometown since 1989. And recently, the VA has determined that no longer will they provide dental services at home, but that Mr. Schwartz, who is in his 80s, must now travel to Wichita, which is about a three-hour drive, to see the dentist. The other one, about a four-and-a-half-hour trip to Wichita or to Denver to the VA hospital in the community of Hoxie. This gentleman needed a new pair of glasses, was not eligible to see his hometown optometrist, as he has for his past history in dealing with the VA, told that he must go to Wichita in order to see the optometrist to have his glasses adjusted. It's at least a four-and-a-half-hour trip, either to Wichita or to Denver. In the first instance, we were able to satisfactorily resolve the issue. In the second, we've not been able to. But those are just examples of people who are in their 80s who have the difficulty. Clearly, going to the city for many of my constituents is a long drive. It's a kind of can be a frightening experience and something that they're uncomfortable with, and generally takes family members or friends, someone from a VSO, to get them there. And so we want to work with the VA and the VSOs to try to make access to health care much more readily available, particularly in the routine circumstances. We've been successful in a number of instances in community outpatient clinics, very much a supporter of those, but there is a niche that still, in my opinion, is unfilled. And finally, the second issue is access to adequate communication between the VA's physicians and the community physicians in regard to medical records. One of my close friends is a professor of family practice medicine at the University of Kansas at their campus in Wichita, Kansas. He's now the president of the National Association of the American Academy of Family Physicians. His point in his letter to me here just within the last few weeks, community physicians complain they do not receive consultation notes, lab tests, and x-ray results back from the VA. The community physician does not know the medications that have been charged or tests that have been conducted when the patient shows up at a local hospital for an appointment. The local physician is unaware of the changes in the veteran's care. And for dual care patients, I think this is a dangerous circumstance, and we want to work closely with the VA to see if we can't solve the problem of that hometown physician or other health care provider that is providing services to the local veteran, that they know about the continuum of care between the VA and that hometown physician. Mr. Chairman, I thank you for having this hearing. I look forward to hearing the witnesses, and again, appreciate Mr. Osborne in particular highlighting the importance of this issue to many veterans, particularly those who live in rural America.
Thank you, Mr. Moran. Ms. Brown-Waite, you're not recognized.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. You know, certainly looking at ways that we can stretch those health care dollars is something that this committee is very, very interested in. As the number of veterans increase, whether it's from the war on terror or whether they are from Vietnam or the Korean War or World War II, I still have veterans from, as we all do, thankfully. You know, we need to find new ways to stretch those dollars so that health care is provided and provided in a very cooperative manner. Last week I had a veteran come to me and he said, I know that the VA does not want to become a pharmacy, but he said it is such a duplication of effort, he said, on my part and also on the part of the health care system that we have in America, to go to a Medicare pharmacist first, physician first, get a prescription, and then have to have a totally new exam and take up a slot that another veteran who doesn't have Medicare could use. So finding ways to stretch those dollars so that the veterans in every single VISN are taken better care of is something that I know this committee feels very, very strongly about, and I look forward to hearing the testimony on this, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. I apologize to everyone for my late entry, and I'd like to thank Chairman Brown, the chairman of the Health Subcommittee, for taking over in my absence. Shortly, we'll hear testimony on Project HERO, a VA demonstration project that seeks to better coordinate fee-based care currently purchased outside the VA. A chief purchase of this initiative would, as I understand, would be to enhance the access of quality care to America's veterans. I believe that this is a timely topic in the sense that Project HERO is currently being considered by the department, and I thought this hearing would also provide us a good opportunity to discuss very publicly what Project HERO is and what it is not. Moreover, it will provide everyone here with an opportunity to share with the VA what they think it should look like and what metrics should be adopted to evaluate the effectiveness of the demonstrations as the requirements are drafted over the coming months. We all know that the quality of health care provided by the Department of Veterans Affairs is excellent. The challenge often lies in the access to VA facilities, especially for veterans living in the rural areas. Public law authorizes VA to use contracted fee-based private health care providers for service-connected injuries and conditions when its own facilities simply cannot provide suitable care for reasons such as emergency, inaccessibility, or certain other factors. Our first panelist, Mr. Tom Osborne, a member of Congress from the state of Nebraska, knows only too well the challenges faced by veterans in his part of this country. Some of his constituents must travel for days to get VA health care. And so, Tom, I want to thank you for your appearance before the Veterans Affairs Committee, for your being here this morning, and for your testimony. I'd also like to thank our panelists, Dr. Mike Cussman, representing the Department of Veterans Affairs, Ms. Kathleen Wiblimo, on behalf of the American Legion, and Dave Gorman, representing the Disabled American Veterans. We also welcome Humana Military Healthcare Services President and CEO David Baker, himself a veteran. And Mr. Baker, I want to thank you for your willingness to step up to the plate and testify here today, especially in light of sort of traditional hesitancy among contractors due to potential procurement sensitivities. And so your willingness to step forward and be helpful to us is welcomed. These panelists will present a good deal of information this morning, and we appreciate the opportunity to learn more about this care coordination demonstration, its potential, and its potential limitations early in the process. Healthcare is undergoing a revolution. Earlier this month, this committee held a hearing on collaborative approaches to the provision of healthcare through enhanced partnerships with teaching universities and other entities such as the Department of Defense. These innovative partnerships have already proven their value in delivering America's veterans efficient health care of the highest quality. But these affiliations are only part of the solution to ensuring wide and timely access to quality care. Project HERO, which stands for Healthcare Effectiveness Through Resource Optimization, is an outgrowth of the conference report of the VA's 2006 appropriation. Its stated objectives are to increase the efficiency of VHA process associated with purchasing care from outside sources, to reduce the growth of costs associated with the purchased care, to implement management systems and processes that further quality and patient safety, and make contracted providers virtual high-quality extensions of VHA, control administrative costs and limit administrative growth, increase net collections of medical care revenues where applicable, and increase enrollee satisfaction with VHA services. In other words, Project HERO should help us learn how to improve some of the contracted care we now provide and the way we provide it. My understanding is that HERO is not intended to undermine our affiliations or to lead to expanded outsourcing or replacement of existing VA facilities. With that in mind, open to the possibilities, but cognizant of the importance of preserving the quality associated with VA healthcare, I look forward to hearing more about this demonstration project. I would now yield to Mr. Osborne of Nebraska. I know you have a written statement. It will be submitted for the record, and you are now recognized for an opening statement.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee and staff. Particularly appreciate some of the staff work that has gone into this. I want to thank you for holding this hearing, and really appreciate the chairman's leadership on this issue. Access to health care is one of the greatest obstacles facing veterans in Nebraska, as well as many veterans across the nation. What we found is that the older you are, the sicker you are, and the further away you are from a facility, the less likely you are to get care. At some point, the veteran simply does not go. And so I think people throughout the VA system recognize this shortcoming. And so currently in the district I represent, there's 64,000 square miles. And if you look at VISN 23, which is what we're talking about here, this would be 390,000 square miles. It would encompass Iowa, Minnesota, Nebraska, North Dakota, South Dakota, parts of Illinois, Kansas, Missouri, Wisconsin, Wyoming. So these are all relatively sparsely populated areas. And veterans in VISN 23 are traveling thousands of miles for their medical care. There's no question that there's a huge amount of travel involved. At each stop that I make in Nebraska, veterans continue to express to me their concern about traveling hours for medical care. Many travel 1 to 2 hours to receive primary medical care, while some veterans who live in the western part of Nebraska must travel 4 days in order to have testing done in Omaha at the Veterans Hospital. Let me explain how that works. They often will drive, sometimes have to get a family member to take off from work to drive them down to Grand Island or someplace where they get on a bus, and then they'll go down to Omaha. They'll spend usually a day or 2 days there and another full day coming back. And at some point, a veteran simply will not make that trip. They can no longer do that physically. So it's certainly a problem. Many veterans in Nebraska are elderly, encounter difficulty, or find it impossible to travel long distance to receive their health care. If a veteran has to cancel an appointment, it may take months to reschedule. Now, we had a massive snowstorm, which we were very pleased to get, covered the whole state of Nebraska a week ago. And the depth of the snowfall was anywhere from a foot to 2 feet. So almost every appointment had to be canceled. And as you know, this may mean that 3 months, 6 month wait to get that rescheduled. And as a result, this certainly creates a hardship. I recently received a letter from the widow of a World War II veteran who resides in my district. Her husband had served 44 months in the military, including 39 months overseas during World War II. In recent years, this veteran suffered from poor circulation and lung problems as a result of years spent serving his country. Because of this man's poor health condition and physical limitations and the distance he lived from a VA medical facility, he was not able to travel the great distance necessary to access the care that he needed on a regular basis. He passed away in a local community hospital in 2005, and this is unacceptable. The thing I'd like to point out here, Mr. Chairman, is that because of the distance factor, sometimes these people simply do not get preventative care. Sometimes their care is undertaken only when things have become critical. And as a result, the life expectancy of many of these veterans is shortened considerably simply because they do not get their blood pressure checked on a regular basis, they do not get their medications adjusted, and all the things that people living closer to a facility can get done on a regular basis. So we're trying to rectify that situation as much as we can. After looking at various options to address these problems, I introduced H.R. 1741, the Rural Veterans Access to Care Act, and this would establish a pilot program to assist highly rural or geographically remote veterans who enrolled in the VA in obtaining primary health care at a medical facility closer to home. The legislation requires the Secretary of the VA to use authority to contract with non-department facilities in order to furnish routine medical services to enrolled veterans who are classified as highly rural or geographically remote. I believe VISN-wide care coordination demonstration will address many of the issues that my legislation is intended to address with regard to access to care. And I might mention, let's say that you're in Chicago and you live on one side of the city and the VA facility is on the other side. It may not be a huge distance in miles, but it may take you an hour, hour and a half to get there. So this is not strictly an isolated rural problem. It also affects people in relatively densely populated areas. So we think this would serve all veterans. Although I believe the demonstrations can be an effective way to provide reliable quality care to veterans in these areas, I understand that the contracts have not yet been written and all the demonstration requirements have not yet been completely defined. So we're dealing with something that's a little bit amorphous here. However, I hope today's hearing will provide a valuable opportunity for everyone to get a better sense of what can be accomplished through the demonstration and give the department a better sense of what veteran needs can and should be addressed through the demos. While I believe it's critically important to provide additional access points through the Veterans Integrated Services networks that have been selected for the demonstration, I think we should also demand that quality standards be effectively maintained. After all, my interest, like yours, Mr. Chairman, is to provide timely quality care to those who have served and are eligible for VA care. Once again, I'd like to thank the chairman, the committee, the staff, for developing demonstration project, and we hope that it will be looked upon favorably. And at this point, I'd be glad to entertain any questions that people might have.
Thank you, Mr. Osborne. The issue that you're touching on and exercising leadership has also been an issue that's been addressed in the independent budget. It's been an issue that was touched in the presidential task force. And so there are individuals of whom are advocates of how to provide this care in the rural areas. But it's one where we say, oh, I know there's a problem. Gosh, I hope somebody takes care of it. We really don't want it to affect our facilities. We want to preserve those facilities and the access and personnel. There's such a tendency in this town that don't ever make a change if it's going to affect the FTE. It's a bizarre nature of the town, I think. But I want to thank you for your willingness to step in to define this, because it deals with the access to quality care. And it's interesting, some people will take that really simple word and say, well, it's defined by only through the gateway toward a VA-based facility. And what you're saying is that it's getting health care on a timely basis to a veteran in need. And so you've given some pretty good examples to us in rural areas on how difficult it is, and if the VA cannot provide that form of specialized care, whatever that need is, it ought to be done on a contracted basis. That's sort of your recommendation to us, correct?
Absolutely, yeah. The main thing we want to make sure is that there's fairly equal access across the country and that there's reasonably equal quality of care. Nobody's going to be able to construct an entirely level playing field. Obviously, if you live out in 50 miles from the nearest town, there's going to be some difficulties. But most of these veterans at least live within 10 or 15 miles of a healthcare facility where they can get their blood pressure checked, where they can get their medication adjusted, where they can at least get primary care. And in many cases, this is what keeps us going a lot longer, because if your blood pressure is out of control and you don't even know it, you obviously are going to go downhill a lot faster than somebody who can get that primary care. So we think that access is critical, and we're certainly not trying to undermine the VA system. We're just saying, as these folks get older and as they get sicker, they just don't go. And really, I think everyone would like to see people treated somewhat equally in the system, and that's what we're after.
Thank you. Mr. Michaud?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I want to thank you, Mr. Osborne, for your testimony. Like you, I'm very concerned with improving access to health care for our veterans in the rural area. And when you had related a situation where it took a veteran 4 days to receive care, travel time, I can relate to that being from the state of Maine. I've heard experience where veterans have taken 4 days as well to receive the care. So I look forward to working with you as we deal with the issue of rural health care and access. So thank you very much for your testimony. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Mr. Moran?
I've already complimented Mr. Osborne during my opening remarks, so it'd only be repetitive, although he's very deserving of those compliments. Appreciate his efforts to once again highlight how difficult it is for many veterans in our country to access health care. And I think he particularly did a fine job in reminding us that it is about extending life. It's about quality of life. It's not just numbers and statistics and number of miles. There's actual consequences to our failure to develop adequate policies to meet our country's veterans' needs wherever they live. And so I commend Mr. Osborne, and I look forward to working with him throughout the remainder of this term to see if we can't get something done. I thank you, Mr. Chairman, for this hearing.
Thank you, Mr. Rand. Mr. Strickland?
Mr. Chairman, I also would just like to say to our colleague a thank you for his obvious concern for a very real problem, and thank you for your efforts to address that problem. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Ms. Brown-White? Dr. Bozeman? Mr. Osborne, if you have recommendations to the VA as we proceed in the definition of the, as the VA proceeds with the drafting of this demonstration program, please let them know, and let us also know what they are. I won't put you on the spot today, but what's wonderful about your testimony here is that we're going to be helpful. Usually what happens is demos, right? We send that down to the executive branch of government, and we wait to see what it is. Right now, we want to know what it is right now as they're proceeding. We don't do this very often, but we know about your legislation. There are members that sit on this committee. We also represent rural areas, and we've all have experienced a very similar fact scenario that, as you have described. And sometimes we can be cold and we can draw a catchment area, a circle around a VA hospital and say, okay, if you're within the catchment area, then these types of rules apply. If you're outside it, these types of rules apply. And we really don't have that sort of managed care on a personal basis that perhaps we really should. It's kind of interesting. We are challenged on this committee because we are managing a social health system. It is. So as we're managing a social health system, a government-based system, we then try to incorporate best business practices of the private sector into a government system to try to perfect a government system. And then as you try to perfect a government system, the system itself develops a culture, and the culture then provides adopts defensive measures to protect it. And what you've done is you've stepped forward here with an idea that it coincides very closely with the initiative from the Appropriations Committee on this demo. And so we're going to try to figure out how we can provide that timely, accessible to good quality health care that you're asking. So I would just ask for your continued leadership on the subject. And I will yield to you if you have any closing comments you'd like to make.
No, Mr. Chairman, I just appreciate the openness of the committee and the fact that I have not been grilled extensively by Mr. Moran. I was expecting much harsher treatment than I got, and so he must be having a good day. I do apologize for the fact that, you know, we're at the start of this whole process. We don't have all the answers. And so I think as we move forward, what we can expect is there will undoubtedly be some difficult decisions have to be made. There may be some additional expense on the front end, but hopefully as this thing proceeds, there will be some long-term savings, and certainly people will be much better served. Because if you think about the cost of providing a van to go from Ainsworth, Nebraska, down to Grand Island, and doing this every day, which is essentially what's happening, that's a trip of 400 miles. when most of the people on that van could probably go 4 or 5 blocks away and get whatever treatment they need. That's tremendously expensive. So long-term, long-haul, we think there'll be some savings, plus access will certainly be much better, and health care will be much better of some of these remote veterans. So appreciate your initiative, and thank the committee and the staff very much.
To be very upfront here with you, Mr. Osborne, is we have two distinct paths in front of us. We have a defined present system, and it's facilities-based, and we're sort of in this pause right at the moment because we are coping with a system that is taking in so many of our returning veterans from the war. So not only those of whom have been injured and wounded, but those of whom have a right of access to care that we've given them, as we're caring for a present population. So we have this pause with regard to building outpatient facilities and these clinics. So what we have sort of in front of us is there is an advocacy of, well, Mr. Osborne, the best way we can do that is we can continue a build-out, even CARES Plus, and build these clinics on almost every corner of America, and that's how we can deliver the care. That is a huge advocacy of a build-out of the national system. It's also very, very expensive. And we're learning this as we have 5 hospitals in front of us that we're to build, billions of dollars. Or do we hold on to a present system like we are and then turn to an initiative that you've done? So we have really 2 very distinct paths in front of us. And so I want to thank you for your leadership. You're right. We need to examine this, and the challenges are in front of us. Thank you, Mr. Osborne, for your testimony.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
First panel is now excused. For our second panel, if you'll please come forward, is Dr. Michael Cussman, is the Principal Deputy Undersecretary of Health for the Department of Veterans Affairs. Dr. Cussman began his military career in 1970, serving with the 7th Infantry Division in Korea. He left active duty in 1972 to resume medical training and complete his residency at the Joslin Clinic in Boston. In 1979, Dr. Cussman returned to active duty at Tripler Army Medical Center in Honolulu, serving as the Chief Internal Medicine, and was later serving as a division surgeon in the Department of Medicine at Brooke Army Medical Center in San Antonio. He became the Army Surgeons General's Chief Consultant in Internal Medicine and the Governor for the Army Region for the American College of Physicians in 1988. He commanded the Martin Army Community Hospital at Fort Benning, Georgia from March 1993 to August 1995, and later commanded Walter Reed in Washington, D.C., where he was promoted to Brigadier General. Following Walter Reed, Dr. Cussman served as the commander for Europe Regional Medical Command, the command surgeon for the United States Army in Europe, and the TRICARE lead agent for Europe. Dr. Cussman, I appreciate you being here. Mr. Loper, good to see you. Gentlemen, if you have a written statement, you do?
Yes, sir. I think that's been submitted, and we'd appreciate it be submitted for the record.
It shall be so ordered. And Dr. Cussman, you're recognized.
Yes, sir. Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I'm here today with Mr. Mark Loper, the Veterans Health Administration's Chief Business Officer, to talk to you about Project HERO. As mentioned, we will submit our written testimony for the record. And let me just up front apologize for my voice. If I lose it, I apologize, and my sidekick will act as my ventriloquist here. My oral testimony will be brief. My testimony today will focus on the goals of the program, our plans to work with veteran service organization, business partners, and academia in implementing the pilot, our criteria for selecting of the veterans integrated networks or VISNs for participation in the pilot, and finally, our preliminary plans to evaluate the pilot. Mr. Chairman, Project HERO is a pilot program developed in November 2005 in response to requirements in the Appropriations Conference report of November 17, 2005. The report called for expeditious action by VA to implement care management strategies that have been proven valuable in the public and private sectors. The report counsels VA to implement this pilot in a manner that ensures purchased care will be secured on a cost-effective manner that complements the VHA's system of care, preserves the agency's interests, and sustains our affiliate partnerships. HERO stands for Healthcare Effectiveness Through Resource Optimization. Project HERO is intended to help VA better manage contracted health care by reducing the associated overall expenditures and improving quality. Done right, the pilot has the potential to reduce our contract costs while improving access, accountability, care coordination, patient satisfaction, and clinical quality. Project HEROES demonstration objectives have been defined and communicated to a number of key stakeholders, including the VA's National Leadership Board, VSOs, industry, and academia. Some of these objectives include reducing the rate of cost growth associated with purchased care, implementing managed systems and processes for contracted care that foster quality, patient satisfaction, and patient safety, and that will make contracted providers virtually high-quality extenders of the VHA, sustaining partnerships with university affiliates, controlling administrative costs and limiting administrative cost growth, increasing the efficiency of VHA processes associated with purchasing care from commercial and other external sources, increasing net collections of medical care revenues, and moving toward the integration of the use of the VA's electronic health record with the episode of care in contracted settings. This last step is really essential to our ability to succeed. During this pilot, VA will work with business partners, including medical schools, to explore potential management strategies that might help VA meet the goals of the HERO project. Participating networks will develop proposals for pilot consideration, incorporating the best available strategies and tactics. Proposals for each network will be reviewed by the network director, VA headquarters, and the veteran service organizations to ensure that they are aligned with our VA healthcare model and to ensure that the best interests of the veterans are addressed at every point in the process. Each proposal will be assessed in terms of its potential impact on the clinical training program of each facility. VA has selected four Veterans Integrated Service Networks to pilot Project HERO demonstrations. They are VISN 8, which includes all of Florida and Southern Georgia, VISN 16, which includes Oklahoma, Arkansas, Louisiana, Mississippi, and portions of the states of Texas, Missouri, Alabama, and Florida. VISN 20, which includes Washington State, Oregon, most of the state of Idaho, and one county each in Montana and California. And last, VISN 23, which includes Iowa, Minnesota, Nebraska, North Dakota, South Dakota, and portions of northern Kansas, Missouri, western Illinois, Wisconsin, and eastern Wyoming. The VISNs selected were among those who have the highest expenditures for community-based care relative to the number of veterans enrolled for care. In addition, these VISNs include some of our largest VA networks, representing 25% of our total enrollment and 30% of our annual out-of-network expenditures. We use these selection criteria to ensure that our demonstration will be representative of the larger VA population and to facilitate our ability to measure whether the pilot is successful. We will assess the pilot's success by evaluating each program using a methodology that is still under development by the Project HERO team. This methodology will measure both clinical and business performance and patient satisfaction and will incorporate rigorous scientific means of measuring results relative to VA's performance metrics. Strategies with demonstrated success will be considered for adoption by other networks. Mr. Chairman, Project HERO is an opportunity for our business partners to work with us to improve VA healthcare, especially healthcare we contract for the VA. We plan to implement the Project HERO demonstration, and we welcome your continued thoughts and ideas about this process. Thank you for your continuing interest in this most important initiative. This concludes my statement, Mr. Chairman. I will be happy to answer any questions that you or other committee members have. Thank you.
This is a very challenging project that you have in front of you, because we have not even sophisticated the present system on how we are delivering the care to Category 7s and 8s. The reason I say that, I talk about the meaning with the collections, this movement to the electronic medical record. If we want there to be an extenders into the system, you know, are we saying that then these providers out there have to also be up to date with electronic medical records, and we get into some legal issues? I don't know where this is going to take us. I just know this is – I don't mind stepping into something that's difficult in darkness and trying to define it. It's how we press the bounds. I just recognize there's some really challenging issues here in front of us. You know, we also struggle with management tools with regard to utilization rate. So whether it's in our Medicaid and our Medicare and TRICARE, I'm thinking about reimbursement systems out there. It's a real challenge and struggle that we have. I also, you know, one of the highest utilization, it's not now, but it was a few years back, was the highest utilization rate for healthcare in the country was in Kokomo, Indiana, and it was in my congressional district. And it was UAW has a very strong presence there, and it was first dollar, no deductible, and the utilization rate was very, very high, and they had to come in, and it just got out of whack. It really did. And so if you have an individual that has a right to care, and it's in the community and just around the corner, being able to put together a system with regard to has effective management tools with regard to utilization is going to be extremely important. I just, in the management of a health system, I just want to throw that out to you as some of my thoughts as we begin to work through this. The other is Coach Osborne was referring to his legislation with regard to enrolled veterans who are classified as highly rural or geographically remote. How would you define that?
Mr. Chairman, I appreciate all the comments that you made, and I agree with you that these are our challenges, and we will work through these to maximize what we can do. I have not seen the legislation specifically that Representative Osborne has put forward, so I don't know exactly what is defined as extremely rural or not having access to care. But obviously it would be someone that had to travel a long distance, but I'm not sure what that would be defined specifically as.
In your demonstration program, are they going to take these types of veterans into account? Individuals that are highly rural or in a geographically remote area?
Sir, as you know, that care for rural veterans and care for rural people who live in rural areas of the country is a very important issue. The Project HERO was not geared or specifically directed in any way to the rural health issue, not to say that it's not important, but it wasn't geared to do that. It was geared to look at what we are doing now when we contract and fee-base care, but it wasn't directed at development of a program specifically for rural health.
I know. We have some overlapping things happening. That's why I sort of asked the question, too. In your written testimony, you mentioned that the VA will develop specific regional action plans to focus on purchasing care in a cost-effective, highly quality manner that is complementary to a larger VA systems. Do you anticipate that the action plans to greatly differ between four VISNs selected as demonstration sites?
Obviously, sir, using the four VISNs with the characteristics that I described in my oral testimony, there may be some nuances from VISN to VISN because of the specifics related to the VISNs, but there will be certain basic tenets that would be with all the VISNs setting certain standards. Right now, as you know, we fee-base and contract a large amount of care, but the ability to monitor that care and assure the quality is a challenge for all the reasons that you already had articulated. And one of the efforts here would be to have a better ability to put in the contracts specifically what we expect to do to meet the standards that we have in our own system, hopefully be able to integrate, and I certainly appreciate your comments about the electronic health record. But we hope to be able to improve what we're doing with the contract.
Well, how will I'm going back to Coach Osborne again. How will geographic regions dictate your action plan?
As I said, I don't think that they will dictate the action plan. I think that the action plan will be generally the same for all four visions. I'm just leaving it open that there could be that there's some nuances from one vision to another that they would have to look at. But generally, the plan would be fairly standardized.
Mr. Michel?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. How will Project HERO mean? What will it mean that in those particular areas that the C-box will be delayed or further access points?
Are you you're suggesting that if we implement this plan, there would be something different about our implementation plan for C-box?
Yes, in those pilot areas.
I don't believe that there's any direct relationship with the implementation of the CBOC plan with Project HERO.
Okay. Given that the VA has already submitted its fiscal year 2007 budget, will you need to request additional funding for the development and implementation of the HEROES program? And if not, where in the budget will you be getting the money to do this project?
Thank you for that question. We believe that we have the resources available to implement this plan, and that long-term, when the plan gets implemented, it will pay for itself with hopefully the savings that we're going to achieve by better managing our contracting and outsourcing.
Now, the resources that you said that you have available for the plan, is that coming out of the different visions operating budget, or will it be out of the central office?
At present, the money will be coming out of the business office and the central office to work on the standards for the plan. We don't believe we will have to tap into the visions early on to develop the plan and develop the contracts.
Okay. The independent budget testimony has raised concern about the Project HERO has strayed far off the course from the independent budget recommendation. Is Project HERO broader in scope than the independent budget recommendation? And is there anything that you can do to put to rest the concerns raised by the VSOs?
Yes, sir. I have read the independent budget. There were obviously questions raised by the VSOs and concerns about that. We have had the opportunity to meet with the VSO leadership. And I wasn't there. Mr. Bill Feely and Mr. Loper were there last week talking to the VSO leadership about the issues that they raised. And it's my understanding that they have a better understanding of where we're going. And some of the concerns that were raised, they are appreciative of the fact that that won't be the case.
Thank you very much. Mr. Chairman, I know we'll be taking some votes pretty soon, so I'd request permission to submit the remainder of my questions in writing.
No objection.
As well, Mr. Chairman, Ms. Brown, she's requested that her statement be included in the record.
No objection.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Riley?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I realize this question, General, may not be 100% germane to this hearing today, but I raise it because of a concern that information that I found out in the last few days regarding emergency rooms at VA medical centers are under review with a possible definition change from emergency room to urgent care center that's being considered by the Veterans Administration. When I first got involved in this issue in my home state of New Hampshire in the Manchester VA, myself, the veterans leaders that I work with, believed that this was a local issue in Vision 1, that it was not part of a nationwide policy debate that the VA was conducting. I therefore asked the medical director of the Manchester VA, as well as VISM 1 administrator Dr. Post, to come to a meeting in my office earlier this week with veterans leaders. And I was somewhat surprised to find out that this is not just a VISM 1 issue, but as I said, a change in the definitions from urgent care, from emergency rooms to urgent care center. And just wondering if you might be able to illuminate a little bit where this policy change is, you know, what kind of oversight this committee potentially has, where you are in your decision making, and if it's totally outside your purview, then just let me know that too. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Thank you for the question. You're right. I mean, it's not necessarily directly related to HERO, but I appreciate your concerns, and I am aware of your concerns and the issue that you bring up. I think there are two issues related. The Manchester issue, just like all other things, really are a local phenomenon that each place has to determine what they're going to do and make recommendations. But as far as the larger thing, we have had an ongoing review of the quality of care and the level of care that we provide in different emergency departments, emergency rooms, urgent care centers. There's a lot of definitions and terms that get kicked around. And no policy has been established. No national plan has been articulated. We are in the process of looking at that, not for any reason other than to be sure that the veterans who are getting care there can expect to get the level of quality care and safety at the institution. If people believe that they're having an acute problem and they really believe there's an emergency room at the place they go, and it's clearly not the standard of being able to provide that level of care, we probably shouldn't call it an emergency room, because we're doing a disservice to the veteran, and they need to be informed that they would be better off potentially going someplace else. This whole issue is purely to look at what is in the best interest of the veterans and maintain the quality of care and safety for them. I hope I answered your question.
If I could, Mr. Chairman, just illuminate on that a little bit. I certainly share the thought expressed that the idea here is to make sure that whether it's an urgent care center or an emergency room is giving the greatest level of care possible, especially in those dire circumstances. And one thing that was brought out to me in this meeting that I had the other day was that oftentimes in my state, because of the payment issue, a veteran will get in their car, their family member will get them in their car, and drive could be, you know, as much as an hour to get to the Manchester VA when there are other hospitals much closer. And quite frankly, when you talk about whether it's stroke or heart attack or other emergencies like that, that golden hour is critically important for the ability to save somebody's life. And so there's certainly legitimate issues there. But what was brought out, and this is more of a comment than a question, by the VSO leaders at the time, was that if there is a unintended consequence, if you will, of an unknown, if you're not Medicare eligible, if you're not Millennium eligible, of who is going to be responsible for payment in those emergency situations, and let's face it, that's an expensive situation, that there's a unintended consequence of an incentive to get in your car and to drive to the VA center because you believe that payment will be taken care of. So I really hope that in any debate on this, and I'm pleased to see that, you know, you haven't established a plan, and I hope that this committee will conduct oversight hearings and work with the administrators. But I hope and trust that before any plan is established, if there's going to be a diminution of hours of operation of these emergency rooms, that the payment issue is also addressed, so that the unintended consequence of, in a dire emergency, somebody thinking, well, I need to go to the VA center because that's where the payment issue will be resolved, that we don't impinge upon the safety of the veteran because that payment issue is not resolved. And I really feel that the one goes with the other, has to be part of any plan for change of emergency rooms nationwide, and look forward to working with you and the committee and the chairman on this.
Thank you. Ms. Hirsla?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And if I might just continue along the line of questioning of Mr. Bradley, and I understand some of the other questions that were posed before I was able to get here by Mr. Michoud about just the payment, the budgeting for all of this. I'm glad to hear that it's not going to affect community-based outreach clinics. And I understand that in terms of the budgeting for Project Hero, that it's not going to initially come out of any VISN's budget. Is that correct? So does that leave open the possibility that while it may not initially come out of the VISN's budget, that at some point in time the budget for a particular VISN may actually be impacted?
Well, thank you for that question. The issue here is that ultimately, as the pilots go out, hopefully, as I mentioned, that any cost to the VISNs would be more than adequately covered by the savings that they get for not having the ability to manage their care and contracted care and fee-based care better than we're doing now. So hopefully at the end of this, there will be actually a profit for the VISNs, not a loss.
And is there a plan in place to track that as in terms of projected cost savings and actual cost savings and how it impacts the VISN budgets?
Yes. I mean, the whole idea, that's what a pilot is about, is to make sure that we can benefit by doing this. If it turns out that we are not maintaining the quality or doing the things that we intended to do, including saving money and be able to get a bigger bang for our buck, then we would have to reevaluate that.
With all due respect, I understand that that's what pilots are about, but our experience suggests that as pilots become expanded and system chains, that sometimes those tracking devices for each pilot tend to not work quite as well once those programs are expanded, and then we find ourselves in a budget crunch. I mean, that's been the case in a number of programs, and just my short time here in Congress coming up on 2 years, I know that that's the case. So I appreciate the assurance, and I appreciate the affirmation about what pilots are intended to do. I just want to make sure that beyond the initial pilot stage, that as the projects are expanded to the degree that we find that Project Hero is indeed achieving the goals that we hope it achieves, that your responsibility, our responsibility on the committee, is to continue to share that information to ensure that the business budgets aren't unduly affected, or to ensure that cost savings that are projected are actually being realized at the level we hope that they'll achieve. Yeah. And the last question would be, as Project Hero moves forward, do you feel that cost savings is the most important consideration when making decisions regarding patient care, for example? And I ask this because many of the veterans in South Dakota are in geographically isolated areas. But will a patient who can receive more cost-effective care through a contract provider be forced to receive care with the contract provider instead of a VA facility?
Thank you for the question. Yes. I don't mean yes to the answer, but yes to the question. The obviously, if a contracted mechanism, fee basing with a contractor, is going to be successful, the majority of patients would have to use it. If otherwise, you won't get your maximum benefit. But we understand the reality of people having formed relationships with particular providers that are clinically important to maintain. And so we will look at that on a case-by-case basis, because although to make it work, as I said, we would presume that most people would use the provider network. Otherwise, we won't get our maximum benefit of assuring the quality and tracking and as well as cost effectiveness. But we certainly don't want to do anything inappropriate clinically.
Thank you for your responses. I yield back, Mr. Chairman.
Sir, I thank you for your questions. She is correct. Sometimes these pilot projects and demonstrations and commissions, three entities that Congress, we love to create, become more organic than mechanical. And they take a life of their own.
And so the oversight of these things are pretty important. We have a vote. We have one vote. And so I intend to recess the committee and return, because I have some questions for you, Mr. Loper. So the committee will stand in recess for 15 minutes. The hearing will come back to order. I have some questions for the second panel. With regard to Project HERO, as I understand, that you're simply trying to better coordinate the care that is already purchased outside the VA, right?
Yes, sir.
Now, as you do that, my sensing is that as you begin to work with private providers, that we're going to learn things in the process, and it could provide for additional venues. Now, I recognize the comment I made before we break with regard to how demos and pilots and commissions all become more organic. And there's also a reason they become organic. It's because sometimes we get into these things and we learn things that we didn't know and we're seeking latitude, and sometimes these things grow. You know, kind of like PFSS, right, Mr. Loper? They kind of grow. All right? Pardon? You're going to take my word for it? But at some point, my sensing is that when you do this VISN-wide, we have to be able to anticipate that points of access will increase. Would you agree with that? I don't care.
Yes, sir, I'm sorry. I think there is a potential for that to occur in the demonstration framework.
So if there's potential for that to occur within the framework, would that potential come from the strength of private contractors also bring to the demo?
Sir, I think that's what we're looking at now, is some input from contractors who have done this, other public venues that have done it, academia, thought leaders on all of this, as well as bringing into account, as I mentioned earlier, our affiliates, to be sure that as we develop the pilots, we try to incorporate the lessons learned from other people who have gone down this road in the past.
Now, Mr. Loper, as you put this thing together, what performance measures do you intend to use to assess the use, cost, and consistency and continuity of care for the veterans enrolled in the demonstrations?
Sir, we have a team working on the specifics of that, but the basic framework that I would offer is that we have a very sophisticated system of performance measurement in the VA, and we intend to use that. The principal reporting unit for the demonstration operations is at the network or VISN level, and we would seek whatever interventions are made within the network to lead to favorable performance in those existing measures.
Let me be circuitous back to an opening comment that I had made referencing the electronic health record. So what measures do you intend to put into place to make sure that the complete medical records associated with the purchased network care will be part of his or her electronic health record?
Yes, sir. Obviously, one of the weaknesses that we have now with people who use different delivery systems, whether we fee-based it or whether they're using a Medicare benefit or some other insurance plan, even TRICARE, and then they come to us, the problem is the coordination of that care. And what we expect to do is write into the contracts the intent to have the providers use our CPRS Vista electronic health system that is proprietary, and it wouldn't be all that costly for that to be used to be able to electronically continue to track the patients. That's one of the linchpins of our potential program.
Let me go back to the issue on costs with regard to the demo. If there are costs associated with the demo, do you know what accounts that you might be looking to take from?
I think I'd like to take that sort of officially for the record with Mr. Norris as the CFO. But having said that, we have invested small amounts of money from the business office to organize the program and acquire the services of someone to help us with the acquisition, which should get us to the point of award for a very modest amount of money. As that then Dr. Cussman suggested that we believe the demonstration will essentially pay for itself. What a specific account that comes out of whether it's medical care or what have you, we'll sort out.
I appreciate the question, and we'll get back to you on that. I'm not sure exactly which.
So you're anticipating that that most of the fee-based care for the service-connected conditions and injuries, that you're going to have collections sufficient to pay for all of this?
We, sir, as mentioned, we are already paying a huge amount of money for contracted and fee-based care. We believe by the pilots will show that when we can care coordinate this care, we will be able to save money on it, whatever that turns out to be, and that will pay for any overhead that we had for the contractors and potentially generate some dollars for us above and beyond that.
Mr. Loper, I understand the VA is reprogramming $5.5 million for the Patient Financial Service System project in Cleveland. Could you please describe why the additional $5.5 million is needed?
Yes, sir, Mr. Chairman. We look forward to the schedule briefing on Friday to a deeper level of review on this. Our program had a scope in 06 to deploy PFSS to Cleveland and to Dayton and be prepared to go further. In light of the recent IT appropriation adjustments to the current program, PFSS was funded at about $5 million. What we explored was what it would take to actually deliver PFSS to the Cleveland operating location. And for a marginal amount, we would seek restoration by reprogramming within our program to 10.5. There are marginal 5.5 to get us to 10.5, and we'll deliver a functional PFSS product at Cleveland later this year.
So these dollars will keep the demonstration project on track for deployment this fall? Is that what?
Yes, it will, Mr. Chairman.
All right. How is the second competitive demonstration project going?
Yes, sir. You mean the revenue enhancement project has been awarded to a veteran disabled business with a subcontractor, and they are beginning work in Asheville at the CPAC, and we look forward to that. It's been awarded basically in a three-phase effort, and the first phase is an assessment. As our competitive bidders each were asked to provide an assessment phase and a performance phase. In the down select, we're real pleased with the nature of the work offered by the successful bidder.
And what? Why did you choose Asheville, North Carolina?
Mr. Chairman, we chose Asheville in the sense that we knew the sense of the committee was that there was an interest in two low-performing medical centers. And as you know, and I believe with the committee's knowledge and consent, we thought CPAC, by addressing at least six medical centers, provided better leverage. And frankly, one of the aspects of all the business proposals anticipated a business model for following success, a site-by-site rollout, which was pretty labor-intensive. So what we're intending is to demonstrate at CPAC, at the same time demonstrate CPAC and streamline deployment to a broader application, if that's indicated.
Dr. Cussman, how would you characterize
You always scare me, Mr. Chairman.
I would ask unanimous consent that minority counsel be given the opportunity to offer two questions. Hearing no objections, so ordered. Minority counsel recognized.
Thank you, Chairman. In the past, VA has based its budget on claims of management efficiencies that the GAO found could not fully be substantiated. What assurances could you give us that this demonstration will indeed be cost neutral or will save money?
Thank you for the question. I understand the issue that you raised. We're very aware of that. And the intent here is to put in very clear performance standards, both clinical and economic, to be sure that we don't, after the pilots, reinforce something that is not economically viable.
Thank you. During Industry Day on February 2nd, you discussed a number of objectives for Project HERO. One of the objectives was including enhancing VA internal capacities and processes to minimize the need for purchased care. Can you elaborate on the role you see for contractors in achieving this objective and the likely cost savings for this component of Project HERO?
I mean, are you asking whether we're going to use contractors to look at our efficiencies in-house?
I was just asking you to elaborate on how the role you see for contractors in that process.
I think that we're doing that internally. I don't believe that there's any contracting mechanism, but we are looking at, I mean, just like any other enterprise, we've got to continually look critically at how we do our business. And I think that we're looking at our business processes to try to be more efficient and approximate our great clinical performances.
I have a question with are you at any time going to seek independent evaluations? Have you thought about this in the end?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, at Industry Day and henceforth, we have expressed a specific interest in external evaluation and validation of whatever program reviews take place.
All right. I may have additional questions for the record, and I know Mr. Michaud also does. Minority Counsel indicates they will have additional questions. I want to thank you for your leadership, and Mr. Loper, appreciate your service.
Thanks.
This panel is now excused.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. The third panel may proceed and come forward. The third panel consists of Ms. Kathleen Wiblimo, who is here representing the American Legion. As their Deputy Director for Healthcare in the Veterans Affairs and Rehabilitation Division, she's a graduate of Black Hills State University in South Dakota, where she received her degree in history. Upon graduation, December 1984, she was commissioned as a second lieutenant in the United States Army. During her 10 years in the military, she served in various positions both in country and overseas, and is currently a major in the reserves. You know, how often have we all been introduced as we were commissioned as a second lieutenant? I've never heard anybody say, yeah, okay, we were commissioned as a brigadier. You know, commissioned as a major, commissioned as a lieutenant colonel, right?
Right.
Doesn't seem to like, it's like the of course, isn't it? I know we get some direct appointments and commissions, but it's always that second lieutenant, the most humbling years of our life, always seems to come back as if that was our greatest achievement. We were commissioned as the second lieutenant.
I've never actually been introduced, so that's very, that's the first time anybody's ever said that.
What, that you were a second lieutenant?
Commissioned as the second lieutenant, right.
Okay. Well, I'll call you Major. Our next witness is Dave Gorman, representing disabled American veterans. Mr. Gorman entered the United States Army in 1969, serving with 103rd Airborne Brigade, the famed Sky Soldiers of the Vietnam War. During a campaign to secure an area in central Vietnam where the United States forces had suffered extremely high casualties, Mr. Gorman stepped on a landmine, leaving him with wounds that required amputation of both legs. Discharged in 1970, Mr. Gorman immediately joined the DAV and is currently a life member of DAV's National Amputation Chapter in Chapter 12, Rockville, Maryland. Mr. Gorman was appointed as Executive Director of the DAV in 1995. Our final witness is Mr. David Baker, President and CEO of Humana Military Healthcare Services. Following a distinguished active duty career of 27 years in the United States Air Force Medical Service Corps, Mr. Baker joined Humana Military Healthcare Services as Region 3 Executive Director in 1996. In 1999, he became Humana's Chief Military Operating Officer, and in January 2000, he assumed his current position. Mr. Baker holds an MBA in Health and Hospital Administration from the University of Florida and a BS degree in Business Administration from the University of Maryland. He is also a graduate of the Executive Program in Health Care Management from Ohio State. And were you commissioned as a second lieutenant? Proudly, Mr. Baker was commissioned as a second lieutenant in the United States Air Force. I'd like to thank all of you for coming and your patience today. And with the American Legion, we'll begin with you.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to present the American Legion's views on the Comprehensive Care Coordination Demonstration Projects. My remarks will be brief, but I ask that my full statement be submitted for the record. We all know VA has made giant strides in improving the quality of care provided to America's veterans. The improvement has not gone unrecognized by the industry, and VA is now considered by many to be the best care anywhere. For the sixth consecutive year, they have set the public and private sector benchmark for health care satisfaction, quite an accomplishment by any standard. This achievement could not have been realized without the dedication and commitment of the VA employees. They have a special mission that they take very seriously, and that is to take care of the nation's heroes. Public Law 109-114 tasked VA, without proper funding, to implement care management strategies that have proven valuable in the broader public and private sectors. These programs are to satisfy a set of health system objectives related to arranging and managing care by the end of calendar year 2006. VA is to collaborate with academia and private industry to assist in reaching this goal. This obviously is no small task. As we understand it, these demonstration projects are to be designed as a complement to VA health care and not as a surrogate. We also understand that the devil is always in the details, and the implementation of these demonstration projects will require strict oversight of the contracting process to ensure that veterans who are being treated by non-VA providers receive the same level of quality and professionalism inherent to the VA healthcare system. There should not be any semblance of a concurrent system, and the process should be transparent to the veteran patient. The American Legion recognizes the need for contracted care, and indeed the VA has had the authority to contract care for quite some time. However, the VA has not always been the most efficient at contracting, and the American Legion has some real concerns. VA must routinely monitor all contracted health care services being provided to veterans, and they must obtain patient satisfaction feedback on the timeliness and quality of care received from contracted providers. While some treatments may be handled effectively by outside contractors, the delivery of more specialized care is very difficult to access outside of the VA healthcare system. Mental health care, blind rehabilitation, amputee treatment, and long-term care services are but a few that come to mind. Further, many of VA's patients are older, poorer, and sicker than the general population. The American Legion is deeply concerned that VA patients would be treated differently than other non-veteran patients. Within the VA healthcare system, patients are a priority, not just a customer, and they receive holistic care. While the American Legion supports veterans' timely access to quality health care, it is important that we do not create initiatives that will lead to the dissolution of the very health care system created to care for these heroes. Accessibility delays must be solved by enabling VA to meet its obligation through adequate funding levels. There is much left to be done with regard to these demonstration projects, and the American Legion looks forward to being involved in the process. Pass through the doors of any VA medical center and you witness firsthand the price of freedom. It hammers home the very reason the VA healthcare system exists, and it also reminds us that the price tag of freedom does not end on the battlefield. Thank you very much. I look forward to your questions.
Thank you very much. Mr. Gorman?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I know you didn't ask, but just for the record, I was never commissioned as a PFC.
If you note, I didn't ask you, and you would have been insulted.
I wouldn't have been. Mr. Chairman, appearing here as an employee of the DAV, I want to just make it clear that I'm making a unified statement on behalf of the independent budget, the AMVETS, Paralyzed Veterans of America, and the Veterans of Foreign Wars. Mr. Chairman, historically, Congress has granted service-connected disabled veterans an opportunity to receive private health care, but has very much limited VA's power to contract for care. And it's been stated already, but bears repeating, generally VA only contracts for care when VA facilities are incapable of providing care necessary for a veteran, VA facilities are geographically inaccessible to the veteran, a medical emergency prevents a veteran from reaching a VA facility in time, VA determines it appropriate for preparation for or completion of an episode of VA care, or VA needs certain specialty examinations in adjudicating a veteran's disability claim. VA also has the authority to contract for care for services of scarce medical specialists in VA facilities. The independent budget acknowledges that VA contract care has been used judiciously and only in specific circumstances so as to not endanger the integrity of VA facilities and the healthcare system in general. We believe, Mr. Chairman, that VA must maintain a critical mass of capital, financial, human, and technical resources to provide direct, high-quality care to veterans, especially those disabled in military service and those with highly sophisticated health problems such as blindness, amputations, spinal cord and brain injury, or chronic mental health problems. Mr. Chairman, in recent months, much has been reported in medical literature and the general media on the stature VA healthcare has achieved in providing healthcare of the highest quality. At a time of public cynicism over the ability of the federal government to respond effectively to public needs, VA, as the provider of healthcare for veterans, has been touted as being, and I quote, the best healthcare system in the United States. VA has achieved this position because it controls the care provided, knows who provides and receives that care, and, more importantly, measures how that care is given on a daily basis. The potential direction and scope of Project HERO, at least as we understand it today, could well evolve into an open environment of mixed VA and private providers. The contract element of that environment, if it focuses on acute and primary care, could well grow. That growth, like the enormous growth we have seen in the TRICARE program over the last 15 years, may place at risk VA's unique qualities as a renowned and comprehensive health care provider for veterans. We have some fear that the HERO project, if it expands outsourcing of health care services, is only a beginning. Once contractors are in place, we would expect proposals from them for VA to contract out even more services. We believe that such a mixed program would only become more expensive, threaten VA's restorative and rehabilitation programs, and damage VA's health professions, affiliations, and its biomedical research, which we all know is the bedrock of VA quality. Mr. Chairman, here is our nightmare scenario. Increasing contract care evolves VA into a mere payer for health care services provided to veterans by others. VA writes the checks to obtain health care to a growing patient population outside the system, but must pay for those services from funds it receives to carry out its health care mission for patients inside that system. In a struggle to manage its growing insurance function, VA's control over the quality and the quantity of inside services diminishes. As a result, veterans and the American taxpayer will lose out on that process. We could not object more strongly to this kind of a change, Mr. Chairman. VA is first and foremost a direct provider of health care to sick and disabled veterans. That single fact is why the VA system is a great asset to America's veterans and to America's taxpayers. We believe the best course for VA is to care for veterans in facilities under the direct jurisdiction of the Secretary when at all possible. For the past 25 years or more, veterans organizations have opposed proposals to contract out, voucher, or privatize VA health care. We believe proposals that claim to expand access to VA to broader areas serving additional veteran populations at less cost or provide health care vouchers enabling veterans to choose private providers in lieu of traditional, well-established VA programs in the end will only dilute the quality of VA care. Given the dire financial straits VA has experienced over several recent fiscal years, privatization, whether called Project HERO or something else, is a vitally important policy to sick and disabled veterans and those who represent their interest. Given that background, Mr. Chairman, I know you're not surprised that we have recommended to VA that VA take a series of actions to improve contract health care. VA contract workloads have grown and now cost over $2 billion annually. VA has not been able to monitor this care very well, consider its relative costs, analyze outcomes, or establish patient satisfaction measures. VA lacks a viable process to verify that contract care is safe and provided by licensed credential providers, to monitor for care, to direct patients back to the VA healthcare system, to ensure records of that care are accurate and complete, and to validate the care received is consistent with VA's clinical policies. Twice in the independent budget, we have recommended that VA implement a program of community care coordination that integrates clinical and claims information for veterans currently cared for by contract providers. VA has achieved significant savings through its current preferred pricing program, which I explain more fully in my written statement. VA has saved more than $53 million since its inception and estimates they will save some $80 million this year. But much more could be done, Mr. Chairman. By partnering with an experienced contractor in this field, VA could define a care management model with a high probability of achieving our objectives in the independent budget. The independent budget suggests the program features would include established provider networks complementing the capabilities and capacities of each VA medical center to meet VA access standards, comply with VA performance standards, and address appropriateness and continuity of care. Case management to assist every veteran in each VA medical center when a veteran must receive non-VA care in lieu of VA care. Standardized billing, record keeping and reporting, and specific methods to gauge and report veteran satisfaction. Mr. Chairman, the overall results of our recommendation, if implemented by VA, we believe will offer veterans a truly integrated and seamless health care delivery system. The fact is that currently many service-connected veterans are disengaged from the VA health care system when they receive medical services from private physicians at VA expense. Based on our current knowledge of VA's pending demonstration project HERO, today we cannot verify that VA is preparing our model of community care coordination for that demonstration. Both at the industry forum hosted by VA in February to announce its plans for Project HERO, and in more recent meetings with VA central office officials, we have expressed our concern about the lack of specifics to describe the coming demonstration. Only within the last week have we learned of the proposed geographical sites for this demonstration. These visits were described to us as the best targets because they spend most of the contract care funds. VA officials have informed us they plan to reduce contract costs in these networks by using some of the ideas we have presented in the independent budget. However, we have not yet been briefed on industry proposals that will shape the VA's bid package, and we have not consulted with the four network directors to assess their plans as of yet. We remain concerned, Mr. Chairman, that in developing Project HERO model, the Department has still strayed off course from the intent of the IB's recommendations. Until our concerns are allayed about the true nature and goals of Project HERO, that demonstration project should not be attributed to or justified by our recommendations. Based on what we know and considering what we do not know at this point, Project HERO is not entirely consistent with our goals for VA contract care. In summary, Mr. Chairman, we believe that we are united that whatever emerges from our managed care industry or from these visits as representatives of millions of enrolled, sick, and disabled veterans, we should be involved in any proposed VA decision-making on this initiative. It is our hope that the Department will shift the focus of Project HERO to achieve the goal of the independent budget, and we hope to work with them and this committee to secure that objective. I would also add, Mr. Chairman, that just last Friday we met with VA, Mr. Feely, and I, speaking now only for DAV, I think that we're a little bit more optimistic about where the VA is driving this project and their intent of it, and we're still anxious to see the bids from the contractors and what VA hopes to achieve by this, and we look forward to working closely with them.
Mr. Chairman, I appreciate the opportunity to provide input today on VA efforts to improve the delivery of and access to cost-effective health care services through Project HERO. I'm Dave Baker, President and CEO of Humana Military Health Care Services, and a veteran of this great country. I have provided a written statement that I would ask be included in the record.
So ordered.
Thank you, sir. I want to begin by extending my appreciation to the Veterans Health Administration for its recent achievements, including its advancements in developing state-of-the-art medical records, CARES programs that have realigned VA costs and assets, its increased efficiency and its control of administrative costs, and I also extend thanks for serving as members of current TRICARE networks when capacity has existed. And finally, I appreciate VHA successes in so magnificently improving the quality of VA healthcare services. As I've heard Dr. Perlin state on more than one occasion, it's not your father's VA. And I agree. It's truly achieved world-class status. Mr. Chairman, since I've not testified before this committee before, some background information may be helpful. Humana Military Healthcare Services is a wholly owned subsidiary of Humana, one of the nation's largest health benefit companies. Our subsidiary was formed in 1993 to work with the Department of Defense in controlling costs, improving access, and enhancing the quality of purchased care services for the military community under a program called TRICARE. We have delivered TRICARE services since 1996, and today we serve approximately 2.8 million eligible TRICARE beneficiaries. Our contracts with DOD are founded on achieving five major objectives. First and foremost, optimizing the delivery of healthcare services inside military hospitals and clinics. Second, maximizing beneficiary satisfaction. Third, delivering best value in the purchased care arena. Fourth, ensuring smooth contract implementations. And finally, providing DOD access to our data. Though the terminology is a bit different, I've seen the objectives for Project HERO, and I believe that they are very consistent and similar. Now, we operationalize these objectives by providing a number of contractually required services. Some or all may be applicable to Project HERO, so let me explain. We provide a stable network of high-quality, credentialed healthcare providers to augment those in military facilities. We furnish complementary medical management services and clinical support. We provide comprehensive customer information and support. We perform various eligibility verification, billing, and enrollment services. We process all claims for services rendered by civilian providers. And finally, we provide DOD access to our healthcare data. I've included specific recommendations on each of these functions in my written testimony. And I also included a series of recommendations related to possible contractual elements of Project HERO. Among the topics the VA should consider are development of measurable standards of performance, inclusion of fair and objective incentives to reward performance excellence, provisions related to the sharing of financial risk, and developing a culture of collaboration and trust with industry partners. I hope these inputs will be helpful to the VA as it develops Project HERO specifications and to the committee as you collaborate in this important undertaking. Mr. Chairman, thank you again for the chance to be here today. I look forward to answering any questions you may have.
Thank you very much. Mr. Gorman, I think what I enjoyed most about your testimony was your last statement on behalf of the DAV, because what I think what we have here is a statement drafted by the independent budget
and then you have your then you met with the VA that puts you in a better comfort. So you gave testimony on behalf of an independent budget that sort of locked in place that didn't have some of the understanding that you then gave as testimony on behalf of DAV. That was my sensing of as I sit in here listening to it. And that's why what I enjoyed most was your final statement, not the original statement. Because part of the original statement, I bifurcated almost. It was very much an alarmist type statement. And then without having knowledge-based, and it's hard to be briefed on something that hasn't even been written. And so I'm concerned about whoever drafted that and gave it to you, and you did your job. You came here to testify on the independent budget, but your last comment was probably the most important comment that I took from your statement. I just wanted you to know that,
Mr. Chairman. I appreciate yes. that, but I would also say that I'm not so sure it's an alarmist view that the oral remarks, the majority of them up front, tried to convey, but. One that we were just very much unsure of how the VA was proceeding, and in many respects, we still are. But I think that the leadership of VHA has come forward and tried to allay those fears. And I think generally there's some optimism now that they're going to be moving forward with the bulk of the recommendations the independent budget has made, plus what we've heard today for testimony, and not necessarily a free-for-all as far as contracting out.
Mr. Gorman, please understand who you're talking with. You're talking to the guy who helped create TRICARE for Life. So as I create TRICARE for Life, at no time was that bastardized as somehow that's private care and therefore that is bad. And so then we have soldiers being treated in a military medical treatment facility, and we have dependents then being treated in a TRICARE, receiving private care, and what? So therefore, we got two different standards, and it's a bad program? No. So even in the VA itself, we have fixed-base facilities, and there are certain times where, with regard to specialized care, what do? We contract for it. When we contract for it, that doesn't mean when you go out to the private sector that it's bad. So the use of privatization is not a bad word. And so the reason I use the word alarmist is because I picked it up not only from the American Legion testimony but also yours on this concern of how somehow this is going to erode the present system, a fear of a surrogate to care, as if all this can be a bad thing. We don't want to deny access to care. If a veteran can't get access to care, we want to be able to get them the care. I cannot believe that the independent budget of the American Legion would be saying, okay, it's got to be through a VA fixed-base facility, and if it's not through, well, I guess tough luck. That's denying access to care, and I do not believe that's what you're embracing.
No, that's not what we've said. What we have said, and if you listened, and I'm sure you did, we think VA has judiciously used their contractability so far. The only fear that we have here is that somebody is going to take this legislation and this authority and this now the creation of this project to run to completely try to, in certain areas and certain programs, completely contract out care. And we don't think that's a good
thing. Let's go down that road for just a second. Why is gaining access for health care for a veteran, a disabled veteran such as yourself, you live in Nebraska and you cannot gain access to care, why is that a if I were to say, okay, we're going to adopt the position of the independent budget, then we're denying you your access to care. That's exactly the testimony of Coach Osborne. So please explain to me why that's a bad thing.
Well, it's a bad thing only if you're going to take, and for example, I asked a question at the meeting with VA last week. Will your contractors, as far as you know, or can you speculate, are they going to require a critical mass a number of veterans if they want to enter into this contract, and they don't know that. It's not a question of denying care. It's a question of taking veteran patients who are already in the VA system and saying, now we've got a contract out here to provide care in the private sector for them. That's not denying care.
It is. It is denying care. If I've got a veteran, Mr. Gorman, let's see if we can get on the same page here. We've got a present VA system. We have enrolled veterans in that system, and it's how do we then access them into the system? If, in fact, they're enrolled, and because they're in distant rural areas, how do we access them into that system? And
I just cannot believe that it would be the position of the independent budget to say that they should be denied their access to care because they live so far out.
We're talking apples and oranges, I believe, Mr. Chairman. That's not our concern. That's almost a separate issue.
Ooh, thank you very much. Thank you. That's why I use the word alarmist, because it's a separate issue.
The rural health care.
Whoa, absolutely. So you've testified at a hearing based on HERO and used an alarmist based on something that's not even been created. So I wanted to thank you for that. No, you did.
You have to explain that one to me.
No. Okay. We want to say, okay, of the present dollars that are contracted from the VA, we want them to be able to show to us how they can institute private sector initiatives and managed care, better utilize those dollars. That's what the independent budget says. That's a good thing. That's what Dr. Cussman wants to do. The testimony goes so much farther into, yes, and we hear what Coach Osborne is saying in his testimony, but there's this alarmist that I get out of your testimony as the independent budget that somehow if you then contract with someone in a remote geographic area with somebody private, that's a bad thing. And it's such a bad thing, it's okay to let that veteran die because we are going to protect the VA-based facility system.
You'll have to show me in our testimony where we said contracting out for rural health care is a bad thing.
Well, then you know what? I accept it as your testimony that contracting for rural health care is a good thing.
It can be.
Thank you very much.
But that's not, you're missing the point of our concern. It has nothing to do with bringing new veterans into the system. It has more to do with taking existing veteran patients, existing programs that VA provides, taking those away from the control of the VA and putting them out into contract care. That's taking veterans away from the VA and putting them into the private sector.
The American Legion gives their testimony. This is the American Legion's testimony. While the American Legion supports the selective use of contracted care in extreme cases where veterans have few or no other options, but we object to the broad blanket approach to outsourcing of care. See, so I always look, these are really clever words, you know, words that have negative connotation or negative meaning, and they're used to generalize. It's always fascinating to me. Extreme cases. American Legion, how do you define that? How do you define the word extreme cases?
If the VA cannot provide the services in the areas that they are needed.
What's an extreme case?
Well, there would be extreme cases in highly rural areas. There would be an extreme case if they didn't have the expertise in their facility. That would be an extreme case.
If you couldn't gain access to an MRI? If you couldn't gain access to a mammogram, if you couldn't get what's an extreme case?
Well, I guess the extreme cases would be those that they could not provide. I mean, that to me would be an extreme case.
See, at some point, we cannot build a VA facility that can be all things to all people. So, Mr. Gorman, you used the word, and I've heard you over the years use it, about critical mass. And you're right. So we build a system with regard to a critical mass and with regard to the services that can be offered. And because we can't be all things to all people with regard to disease management, we recognize in our affiliations with our medical universities that there is subject area expertise that we can gain access to. And we contract for that. And that's what Dr. Cussman does at many different affiliations. Every one of those medical-based facilities do that. So with regard to then these individuals that find themselves in a rural or geographically remote area, why shouldn't they be able to gain some access?
Well, we've never said that they shouldn't have access.
Oh, well, thanks. That's exactly, thank you. Mr. Gorman, in your written testimony, you state that the VA has no systematic process for contract care services. So it seems to me that the stated objectives of Project HERE are nearly identical to those that you called for in your testimony, as I was also listening to that. You disagree?
No.
Okay. Your meeting that you had with the VSO, did you do that in capacity as independent budget, or were you there as executive director of the DAV?
DAV.
Okay. And what is your level of satisfaction with regard to the outcomes of those meetings?
The first one, I believe, was horrible as far as an outcome, because there was no good plan laid out. There was no good descriptive nature of the scope of Project HERO. Once that was conveyed, a second meeting was held without the principal of the first meeting, and that was Mr. Feely at the second meeting. I think at that point the scope, although still largely unknown because the contracts haven't been let, they haven't been written, and all those other kind of variables, the intent of what VA wants to move forward with was more satisfactorily relayed and described to us outside of, I think we've always agreed with the principles that the VA has taken as relayed in the independent budget. It's the generalized contracting of care that has always concerned us. That was more fully described as not their intent.
American Legion present at this meeting?
I'm sorry, what did you say?
Were you present at this meeting?
Yes, we were.
What's your assessment?
Well, the meeting with Mr. Feely went really well. We were very, it was very productive. We had good feelings about it. And like I wrote in the testimony, there's a lot left to be done on these projects. I mean, these are demonstration projects. They're pilot programs. Just like you said earlier, you know, we don't know what we don't know. We don't know, and we're going to learn from this. And our major concern is that it grows into something that was unintended. And we recognize that VA needs to change with the changing veteran population and the changing patient population, and certainly the demographics of where people live. The pilot projects are just that. They're pilot projects. VA has a great leadership in VHA, and we know that they are very sincere in putting their program forward and doing the best that they can for the veteran. So the second meeting went, I thought, much better. And we look forward to working with everybody as far as getting these projects going and steering them in the right direction.
Do you ever have any of your legionnaires or members of DAV ever come up to you and say, you know, all I should do is I should have a card and I should be able to gain access to health care with any doctor like anybody else, and off they go?
We've certainly had that. Yeah. We have that within our membership.
I get it a lot.
Certainly.
That's why I'm saying.
We do. Yeah, we do. And we get that all the time. So,
Mr. Gorman, I want you to know that when my service here in Congress is extensive with regard to the entire medical systems, whether it's the military health delivery system, VA, Medicare, Medicaid, and the private pay systems. And I enter into many forms of pilots and demos and examinations, and I do so without any form of fear. I never fear because I hold on to some pretty strong principles. I respect the doctor-patient relationship, and whatever we can do to press the bounds of science to enhance the quality of life of our citizens is a good thing. And how do we gain access to this health care for people at prices that they can afford, and who earns what? And I mean, I deal with all these issues, but I don't react well at all. I just don't react hardly at all to things that, oh, if you do this, it triggers that, X, Y, Z, and all kinds of other things. I mean, I think about consequences that are beyond the unintended consequences that you talk about. But when those veterans come up to me and say, Steve, I should just have a card. If I want to go to the VA, I should be able to go to the VA. If I want to go to my own private pay doctor, I ought to be able to do that, and you ought to pay for it, and away they go, right? And I also tell them about the importance of VA-based facilities, to making sure that we as a country fulfill an obligation to a veteran to provide medical care to them. But I also am conflicted because there are individuals that find themselves, as Coach Osborne had testified, that are in geographical areas and remote areas, and how come they can't get their care? And if they can't gain access to it, then they really, if you can't get access, then you really are being denied care. Oh. That's what you've testified to us about that. You use that in all your propaganda and stuff that you put out there that, oh my gosh, eights, if they can't get in, they can't get the access, therefore you are denying them care. So I know what the mantra is. And that's why earlier I had mentioned to you that these individuals, if they're in geographically remote areas, they really are being denied their care. So I'm trying to figure out how we can gain access to them. That's what I'm trying to do an explanation for you, Mr. Gorman.
Well, again, from my perspective, Mr. Chairman, you're still talking apples and oranges. It's not a question. We would holler louder than anyone if a rural veteran can't get access to care. And we have. That's not the issue here. That's not the issue that we're trying to put. Maybe we're just not explaining it very well. We're talking about a new program that is all of a sudden going to potentially have the impact of taking patients who are already getting their treatment within the confines of the VA healthcare system under the auspices of VA by VA physicians with all the safeguards that go with that, being potentially removed from that system and put out to the private sector. That is not the same as denying veteran access to care. You already have.
Yeah, but this is going to be defined narrowly.
If that's the case, I think then we're entirely supportive of it based on the IB recommendation.
Yeah, this is going to be defined narrowly. That's why I use the word alarmist. I know you don't like that word. But the reason I use the word alarmist is that we're trying to say, okay, we're working on Project Hero, okay? And then, my gosh, if we do Project Hero, then, oh, my gosh, this can happen.
Well, only because Project Hero isn't like this. It is like this right now. It's wide open.
Well, it's sort of wide open at the moment. They're going to let us know. We're going to work with you. They're going to work with us.
And all we want to say is as long as it's wide open and when you're going to start narrow the focus down, keep these concerns in mind. That's basically our message.
Right. Well, my concern is to make sure that that disabled veteran out there gets his access to care.
That is
my concern. My concern is not, as you had set the alarms, that somehow this project, if it expands, begins to erode or dissolution of a health system. Wow. That's pretty huge generalization. Wow.
Well, we're speaking in generalization to a generalized situation,
right.
Mr. Chairman.
Well, that's true, because it's not very defined.
It's undefined.
It's not very
defined.
It's an undefined
situation, so, you know, encompass everything.
Well, I'm having this conversation with you here because we're trying to work through this. We're going to the same – we believe in the same thing, okay? It's how we're going to get this delivered. And so does Dr. Cussman and Mr. Loper. So this letter that you had sent to the VA, where is this? No, I'm not. Neither of you were signatories to this letter. Oh, no. Joe Villante signed this letter. This January 5th letter that you sent to Chairs Walsh and Hutchison, you familiar with this letter?
Not by date.
It is a letter that expressed the concerns about the HERO project. Are you familiar with it? Would you take that letter, Mr. Gorman? I'll show you a letter dated January 5th, 2006, signatories of four of the VSOs of the independent budget. Do you recognize this letter?
I do now.
And My question is, are the concerns, well, first of all, I was trying to reconcile the position of the independent budget with positions that were taken in the letter. Do you believe that there are any indiscrepancies?
I'm sorry, between the concerns?
Do you believe there are any indiscrepancies between the recommendations of the independent budget and that letter that you have in front of you?
I don't believe so, Mr. Chairman, on a quick read.
Okay. And so then I should today embrace your testimony that the recommendations of the independent budget are now closely mirroring that of Dr. Cussman.
In part.
Okay. So I should accept the testimony of today, not that letter, right? In other words, some of the concerns raised in that letter have already been addressed. I want to be able to have a credible conversation with Chairman Walsh.
Well, I think so. I think we're still talking the same thing, although we're still talking here that we're supporting, as an independent budget, the better management of the care that VA is contracting out, and still in opposition to, as it says here, to ratcheting up the level of contract care or to increase and exponentially expand the level of contract care.
Well, that's an issue for another day, okay? If we're able to learn things, and now we're going back to the issue about being organic versus mechanical, if we get to learn things and somehow we can improve quality of care and access, that's an issue for another day. Mr. Baker, I'd like to ask for your insights that you could offer based on your experience with TRICARE in the development phase. What are some insights that you could give to the VA right now as they formulate this demonstration project? I know I embrace your testimony, but if you could articulate them a little bit further.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. If I could offer any advice to the VA and indeed to the service organizations, it is in the wisdom of incrementally moving down the path that you're moving, and the demonstration projects embedded in Project HERO make perfect sense for me. I'm reminded of the way TRICARE has evolved, and as you pointed out in your introduction, I'm a TRICARE beneficiary as well. I'm reminded of the fact that TRICARE started with a series of demonstration projects in the early 90s. In fact, the services started some of those back in the 1980s. And with each iteration, we learned more and more. And in fact, that was true with the service initiatives. It was true with the demonstration projects that DOD started to run. And it was true with each and every iteration of the TRICARE contracts as they migrated from the West Coast to the East over a series of years. They got better all the time. And they were refined to the point that they met the department's objectives, better met the department's objectives over time. And I would just encourage everyone to bear in mind that the VA is trying to become more efficient. They're not trying to solve a 10-year problem with one demonstration. It's my belief that the demonstration projects will provide lessons that will serve as springboards and enable the VA to become even better.
I am trying to understand a little bit better, Mr. Gorman, and your fears.
And the reason I want to have this conversation with you is let's use, because you're sitting here with a TRICARE provider, so let's have this conversation. American Legion, you can pipe in anytime you like. We have in the 1990s and prior, soldiers being treated at military medical treatment facilities, and retirees gaining their access to facilities-based care, these medical treatment facilities, on a space available. But it really, they would do everything they could to care for them. And then as we go through the drawdown and base closures, then these individuals are going to be triggered then into Medicare. Okay, so we went through that 1990s of how are we going to resolve this as TRICARE was evolving. The one thing that I've learned through the development of TRICARE for Life and having done the pharmacy redesign was that beneficiaries love convenience. They do. And convenience also has an impact upon utilization. Okay? So it's interesting. I probably, when I look back on the development of TRICARE for Life, I probably did not do as good a job on utilization management tools as I should have, because soldiers and dependents are utilizing that program a lot, and it's costing DOD a lot. And they also then tried to go in, and even though we put in management tools that we don't have on 7s and 8s, and you've heard me talk about that before, they have an explosion on costs, and they're trying to cope with that within DOD. Now, my concern, Mr. Gorman, is more on escalation on costs as opposed to yours about the erosion. If you have a surrogate that begins to erode a critical mass and then you begin to have a dissolution, I'm kind of commingling the two of your testimonies. I am trying to figure out how we can best serve a veterans population, and I just want to let you know, I do not fear private pay systems. I don't. So we're managing a social system that really does pretty well cost-wise, because the pressures that Mr. Loper here puts on contractors and suppliers, and you get it at the best rate, better than anybody else out there in the private sector. And so people like to talk about how much better health care is, or cheaper, I shouldn't say the word cheaper, less expensive in the VA. But, wow, we have some challenges. Well, I shouldn't beat this one continuously. Your fear, your fear is is any form of erosion of a critical mass of enrolled veterans. Is that sort of a close?
My fear is an erosion of the critical mass of veterans over a period of time to a significant degree where you have veterans who otherwise could or should have been treated within the VA facilities, as has been the case up to now, with their specialized programs and expertise, all of a sudden being told, as new enrollees, we're going to have to put you out on a contract basis. Once that starts to happen, in our view, the very, very real potential for critics of the VA would be to scale down the size of the VA or VA medical centers to the point where they become inefficient.
But here, the reason I want to have this conversation with you to explore this is that I think the real pressure doesn't come from whatever the critics are. The pressure comes from your membership.
or i.e. the beneficiaries, the enrolled veterans, because once you extend it out there, let's say now I'm jumping into the what if. We extend it out there, and to the American Legion, the your site of the word extremes. Let's say that we're able to define the types of care that's out there. The pressure of your membership to redefine the access to care to private base, which is closest or convenient to them, will be great. That's what I'm just saying, things that I've learned out there from the management of all these systems. It will. I just sense that that could very well happen. It's not coming from, matter of fact, I don't even know who the ghost is that you just cited as the critics of the VA. I don't know who those ghosts are. I don't know who they are. Do you know who they are?
Well, we would typically say it's OMB, and has been for years.
Well, I don't know. OMB has delivered some pretty good budgets that have built this health system for which you were singing its praise. So it can't be OMB as the ghost. I just want to let you know, I'm trying to jump into your vein to define fear, and I think it could very well be that when you have an enriched benefit and convenience to access to care is an enriched benefit, that's where individuals begin to envelop. That's where it begins to envelop. And without sufficient utilization tools. Matter of fact, the utilization tool that you're using right now to the American Legion is this one, that it should be defined as extreme cases. That's a utilization management tool. You're setting a definition with regard to whom can only gain access to private care. That might be permissible. I'd ask unanimous consent to permit a minority counsel to ask any questions she may have. Without hearing no objections, so ordered.
Thank you, Chairman. This is, I guess, to the two VSOs represented, and I guess, Mr. Gorman, you're representing both DAV in some personal capacity as well as the IBs. The testimony from Dr. Cussman, written testimony, is clearly the overall goal is to maximize the care we provide directly. And then that he states that VA's care is high in quality and less costly when we deliver it directly. Only when we cannot provide care directly should we purchase care. That seems to state very clearly this is not about outsourcing or trying to reduce that critical mass that you talk about that is important to maintain the VA system's quality to veterans and capacity to provide care in specialized services. I sense some of the disease about Project Hero has been because many of the basic parameters are undefined. Are there any particular parameters with regard to scope in terms of time or cost or number of veterans to which this would apply or duration so that we can then come back and step back and see what lessons we've learned that would increase your comfort that this is not going to morph into something other than what they're saying their ultimate goal is?
I don't have anything to comment about the scope yet. The whole thing with the Project Hero and the parameters and this is what we want to do and the VA saying this is what we want to do. Historically, the and I don't know that our testimony was alarming I would not characterize it as alarming, as more, better put, we want to make sure that we're heard. And so we repeat ourselves and we say, we want the VA healthcare system to stick around. We think they're the best. Certainly there are reasons why they have to contract out, and that is all recognized. It's been recognized for years. But again, you don't know. Everything is so undefined, and I know the VA will get there, and we want to be there to help them get there and define that kind of stuff. But when you first read, when you went to Industry Day, which was back in January, there was mass confusion as to what was going to happen, which led to the meetings, which led to a much better understanding just recently. So I think, again, as we go through this process, like Mr. Chairman Boyer was saying, absolutely we're going to learn from this. But, you know, we want the VA to stick around, and I know everybody in this room does too. And we want the veteran to be treated the best way that VA knows how, and that they're the priority patient in all of this. And to convey that to the contracted providers is important. So there's a lot of discussion that has to go on, but, you know, I wouldn't presume to sit here and try and figure out what the scope is just sitting here right now. We'd have to look into that.
I don't want to be duplicative of what Kathy said, and I agree with everything she said. I think we wanted to put out front and up front the concerns that we had, and also the support that we had with VA for this project to go forward. We think it has a long way to go. It's going to do great things, I think, for the VA internally and also ultimately for patient care. But we also want to see it not go too far too fast. And I think that's the concern that we've brought to VA. And hopefully that's ultimately what's going to come out of the discussion here, is that there are concerns out there and there's a lot of support out there for this from everybody for this project.
Well, I want to thank all of you for your testimony. More importantly, all three of you for your service to country. And Mr. Gorman, next time I'll make sure I recognize you the date of your enlistment as a private E1.
E3.
You went in as an E3?
I didn't. I came out as an E3.
Right. You went in as a private E1.
E1.
Well, I want to recognize that status. That's an important status in your life. Thank you very much for your testimony. The hearing is now concluded.